From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to North America's most listened to late-night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Well, make yourself a note here. We should be talking with the attorney for the time traveler John Teeter's family tomorrow, if all goes well. That apparently is set up and ready to go. That should be live. Anything could happen. He could be snatched off into the future. But that's the plan. We should be talking to the attorney who represents the family of time traveler John Teeter. And you've been following that incredible story. Also, my chat with the devil has taken a very strange and bizarre twist. As the channeler, the person apparently who the devil speaks through, doesn't want me to have a priest or some person of the cloth standing by to shield me during that interview. And I don't know what's going to happen there now, because I felt pretty comfortable if I had a priest there with me. I'm not sure what we'll do. I'm going to powwow with one of our producers here, Tom, and see what we should do, what our next step should be. But that is kind of a bizarre twist. I'll keep you abreast of that situation. Next hour, Charles Upton, our guest. He believes UFOs are part of a great deception. Also, they have some thoughts on what he calls 8 legends of the end. But first, and I want to stress that this is a story on the internet, but I want to tell you about it tonight in the event you begin to start hearing about it over the next couple days. It was an interpretation taken off a German website. This was sent to me by one of our listeners who said, this is the translation breakdown, as you'll see on the website. It's a scary story, so much so, I called planetary scientist Daniel Derda tonight. I trust Daniel Derda. Daniel does not know about this situation until I called him. He's going to check into it. He's not that concerned about it, but he will check into it. As a matter of fact, he had me go to NASA's Near Earth Object Program website. What I'm about to tell you is not listed there. It is merely an internet story. But Dan Derda will check into it, and in the next day or two, hopefully give us an update on this, but I will tell you about it now. According to this German website, there's an asteroid called ALH-2804. It apparently was supposed to come very close to the planet Earth, some 100,000 kilometers. But now they say newest computations show that this course has changed, and that this asteroid is on a 90% probability of smashing into the planet on August of this year. Don't panic. I've got some of the best experts in asteroids checking into this story. It's on the internet, and you need to just know about it again. Apparently, it is 2 kilometers in diameter. They call it a global killer. They say that if it should hit some landmass, it will release a global climactic disaster. If it falls into the sea, they think that the tsunami waves would be at least 300 feet and would go hundreds of miles inland, depending on how far out it goes. So we will follow up on that story. They say that the European Space Agency and the Russian Space Agency are being advised on what to do, that NASA knows about this, and that we even have large telescopes pursuing this object, and constantly we are looking at measurements. A bizarre story on a German website translated to English, with Daniel Derda as our planetary scientist telling me he has not heard of this, and he will check into it. He was a little concerned over the ALH version, but that is, there are some asteroids that are called that, and it's called 2804, if any of you can stumble into that too. You need to know about that. A carbon-rich substance found filling tiny cracks within a Martian meteorite could boost the idea that life once existed on the planet. The material resembles that found in fractures or veins, apparently etched by microbes and volcanic glass from the Earth's ocean. Details will be presented at the Lunar and Planetary Science Conference in Houston, Texas, next month, proving that carbon in Martian meteorites is there, and not contamination from Earth is crucial to the question of whether life once arose on the red planet. With us now is Coast to Coast Science Advisor Richard C. Hoagland, who will be with me this weekend, along with his dearest friend Robin Felkov. We'll tell you about that in a second. Richard, this story here seems to be coming back. What do they mean by opening up the debate? Have they changed their minds from what we had heard years ago?
Well, there's been a big controversy going on. By the way, good evening, George, and good evening, everybody. There's been a big controversy since 96 when the ALH84001 meteorite that fell in Antarctica and was collected and sat, you know, in a pail behind a door in Houston for decades was analyzed and found to have these remarkable microstructures that look like little tiny fossilized living organisms. And the debate has raged, you know, was this meteorite from Mars? Was it kicked off by a larger impact? Did it travel to Earth, fall to Earth, you know, sit in the Antarctic ice for, you know, thousands of years, something like 13,000 years is one estimate I saw, and then was picked up and collected and analyzed and proved that there once had been at least microbial life on the red planet? That's been the debate. There have been people on the pro side, people on the con side. This is a new meteorite called the Nakhla meteorite. It fell in Egypt in 1911.
Mm-hmm.
It broke into several pieces. A few of them wound up in London at the museum there, which kindly agreed to provide to the team, which includes Colin Pillinger, who was the principal investigator on the Beagle mission, the ill-fated Beagle mission of a couple of years ago.
He's the Brit, right?
He's the British guy,
yeah.
Very good scientist, who wanted to do an isotope measurement of the Martian atmosphere to prove or disprove the idea there was life on Mars. Well, he's doing the same kind of isotopic studies of the carbon found in this meteorite, and so far they're going to present their full details at the what's called the 37th Lunar and Planetary Science Conference in Houston in March. But the preview is that they found this carbon, which appears to be from organisms. It doesn't appear to be resembling carbon found here on Earth with contaminants of carbon-14. And it looks like it's the kind of stuff that would be left behind by fossilized life forms that may have come from wherever this meteorite came from.
Well, this
not
is,
from Earth.
This is dramatic, except you know what? Deep down inside, you already know there was life on Mars.
Well, but it's even bigger than that, George. This is not from Mars. If Tom, Ben, Flannery, and I are right, all these meteorites they found they think are from Mars are really from the exploded Planet 5.
That's right.
Plastered the solar system with all kinds of debris, and then that's a huge paradigm shift. But what it means is it makes the Stardust mission, those little samples that came back that we're looking at over NASA's shoulder, even more important, because if pieces of stuff hit Mars or hit the Earth and contained former life forms, then the Stardust mission should have picked up some of these pristine organisms in space, brought them back, and that could be the big, big surprise of the Stardust mission.
Exciting times, Richard. One real quick question. This story that I led with about this asteroid that Dan Derda, our planetary scientist, does not know about, and I
yeah, and I don't either, and
him.
I'm very suspicious of things I don't know about because I know about almost everything
that
goes on out
me
there.
Too. And, it's on a German website, interpreted, translated to English.
Well, one clue that it's not real is the ALH part,
because
that stands for Allen Hills, and that's the tag given to meteorites like the one they found the life forms in 96 that were found in Antarctica. So it would not be useful to name an asteroid way out in space millions of miles away after the Allen Hills in Antarctica.
I think
this is a nice, cute little hope.
All right, and let's hope it is. Richard, you're going to be, of course, with me this weekend at the LAX Hilton.
And oh, do we have surprises.
Oh, that's what I'm told. You're speaking Saturday at 7, and then what, Monday at 4?
Monday at 4.
And Robin,
I'm doing two huge major presentations. They're like productions for movies. And I'm going to knock your socks off with new data on 2012.
All right. And Dr. Robin Felkov, your significant other,
she's
going to be there. And she's got a presentation at 10 o'clock on Saturday.
On Saturday morning.
On health. Great. Now, if you need any information, those of you who live in the greater Los Angeles area, or if you're going to come up for the conference, go to the coasttocoastam.com website. You can also go to the enterprisemission.com website, get the information on that. Go on by and say hi to Richard C. and Robin. And I will do that myself. If you need a toll-free number, that's 800-367-5777. Richard, I'll see you this weekend.
See you there.
Okay, we were, Richard and I. We're going to launch a rocket this weekend and videotape it and put it on the coasttocoastam.com website. But because conditions here are called red warnings and they are afraid of fires, we might not be able to do that. But we will put that in abeyance until later. We'll see what happens. If you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, look at the feature story of the tyrannosaur that has been found, a 9-footer. They also found bones of a 6-footer. But just take a look at this creature. It's part of the Tyrannosaurus rex family, except this one has funny feathers on its head. Great artist depiction on the coasttocoastam.com website. Strange story here. West Virginia's two U.S. senators have asked top military leaders to explain why a first lieutenant by the name of William Eddie Rebrook IV had to reimburse the Army $700 last week for body armor and other gear that was damaged after he was seriously wounded by a roadside bomb in Iraq. He's 25 years old. He was medically discharged from the Army base in Fort Hood, Texas last week. He said he wouldn't keep the donations that so many people have been sending him. He passed the money along to charity and to a Louisiana woman who lost her home in Hurricane Katrina. That's a soldier for you. He said the woman's son helped save his life in Iraq. He had borrowed then $700 from his buddies to pay back the U.S. Army for the destroyed body armor and gear. And the two U.S. senators are fit to be tied over this, and they should be. So we'll find out what happens on that. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has accused Iran and Syria of fueling anti-Western sentiment in a row over these cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. She said both countries had used the opportunity to incite violence and exploit Muslim anger. I agree with that. I also think that there is a bigger group involved that is also inciting this anger. The United Nations, by the way, and the European Union have reached an agreement to issue a joint statement condemning the cartoon as insults to Islam, and they say the newspaper was wrong to do it. In a moment, our guest will be spin doctor Dr. John Curtis. He's our guest as we talk about this situation to see if it can be repaired or if it's going to get out of control. John Curtis, he's the editor of theonlinecolumnist.com, a columnist for the Los Angeles Daily Journal. He is a director of a Los Angeles-based think tank specializing in corporate consulting, strategic planning. He is a seminar trainer, columnist. Dr. John Curtis is considered the nation's leading authority on spin and damage control. We turn to him whenever we have to talk about issues at large. Dr. John, first of all, welcome back to Coast, John. How are you?
Very good, George. Good. Good to talk to you.
This situation in the Middle East seems to be going out of control, and I wanted to first of all get your overall perspective to all of this. You've had about a week to look at this. What do you think?
Well, I actually have a column posted on the website right now on the subject, and you know, it's a complex subject. It's not quite as simple as people think it is. I know that on a number of talk shows, we're hearing about it as a free speech issue. And I think that Bush was made some comments today indicating a bit of damage control, saying that, well, he condemns the violence. He feels that the press has really stepped out of line by publishing something that it was clearly offensive and incendiary in nature. Now, the circumstances are that we're occupying Iraq right now, as everybody knows. Its seismographic sensitivity right now across the Islamic world, they feel under siege, basically. So here these Danish cartoons come out, basically depicting Mohammed apparently with a turban, a bomb in his turban and whatever, highlighting the fact that suicide bombing is, you know, become quite a problem for the West. And no one quite comprehends why people suicide bomb. So what it reflects, I think, George, is really the just incredibly sensitive nature of geopolitical affairs, especially with the Islamic world right now. And we're talking about 1.2 billion people that are in largely living in very repressed situations, suffering, you know, with widespread unemployment, poverty, and circumstances that are unimaginable to the average Westerner, for the most part, especially in refugee situations, to traumatize population. So it's radicalized by nature, and I think any kind of a incident like this can be very easily exploited by Al Arabiya and Al Jazeera, the two media outlets there that are playing these images on a 24/7 basis of these offensive pictures.
And by the way, apparently of the original 12 that artists had made, these imams who were running around inciting people carried with them three drawings that nobody knows where they came from. They're now beginning to theorize that these extremists drew them as part of this hate mail campaign.
Well, I think that, you know, what we're going to find is that, you know, the circumstances being incited and exploited by these radical extremist groups like Al-Qaeda, and there's other groups as well that are destined to, I mean, they're designed basically to destabilize the entire Middle East.
Well, see, I have said, John, that beyond Iran and Syria, which I truly believe are behind this, that there's probably also some inciting going on by what we've always called the globalists or the Illuminati, who truly want to fan a major, major war here.
Well, I do. I think they see it as the beginning of World War III, and as a matter of fact, a lot of the administration, our administration sees this as World War III, and we've heard statements to the effect that we are at war, and this is the beginning of World War III, basically, which is an asymmetrical war with an Islamic. We've heard statements coming from the administration, Secretary of State Defense Rumsfeld. We've heard it from Condoleezza Rice, and we've heard it from Bush, and we've heard it from Cheney, that this is an attempt by the Islamic world to radicalize the planet from Indonesia all the way to Scandinavia. So that's the context in which this warfare, this global war, is going on, and why these kind of pictures, I mean, granted that it was the most politically incorrect possible picture. You know, we have a culture here that has such sensitivity to any kind of political, anything that would be construed as offensive to any racial or ethnic group, and yet we find ourselves right now, you know, defending the right of newspapers to publish this kind of propaganda.
Well, you see, I've gotten some emails from some people who are saying, George, you, if anybody, should be defending rights of free speech. And first of all, I have never said that the newspapers shouldn't have the right to publish what they want. I have said they were wrong publishing what they published.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Because, you know, there are limits to free speech. I mean, you can't scream out fire in a crowded movie theater and cause a stampede. And you know that in the Islamic world, we just had I believe it was a few weeks ago, the Hajj pilgrimage to Mecca, in which routinely, on a yearly basis, we're talking about. It's like the running of the bulls at Pamplona.
350
people were stampeded to death. So we have in the culture, the Islamic culture already, a high degree of emotionality, less kind of left-brain, Western kind of rational thinking that exists in this side. And I'm not putting a value judgment on which is better and which is worse. But what we do know is it is a very different culture, and they're driven to incitement much, much more quickly and express themselves differently. That doesn't mean that they can suicide bomb and they can infringe on people's rights. But I think what you're pointing out about the limits of free speech is that given the circumstances of us occupying Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, now we were not the ones that published this, to be sure, but the editors that permitted this to go over the to go into these newspapers, I think, were not considering the possible repercussions.
Indeed. Now, can this be fixed, John, or is it too late? Think about that when we come back, all right? We're going to take this break. Dr. John Curtis, our guest, can this be fixed? or are we on a road now where we just can't get off? We'll also open up your phone lines, give you an opportunity to talk with Dr. John Curtis, because next hour we've got a full coast-to-coast program with you, with an expert who's going to talk about the UFO deception, his opinion. But for now, let's talk about this. So I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the consensus so far, everybody fast-blasting me, because they've done some checking. They've stumbled into the same kind of information I have about this puzzling asteroid story that we talked about. But the consensus is it's probably not real, maybe a joke or a hoax that was on a German website. We're going to have planetary scientist Daniel Durda, however, check it out. And he's going to get back to me tomorrow or the day after, so I'll pass that information on to you. But it is probably what we suspected, but good work so far, everybody, so keep it up. And other websites apparently are beginning to pick this story up as well, so I'm glad we followed up on it. But we'll have planetary scientist Daniel Durda do some due diligence for us just to make sure that it really isn't real. I'll tell you what is real, though. The After Dark CD called Perfect Possession, Art Bell's interview with the late Father Malachi Martin, available to you this week only, and then that should be it. They've got a select amount left. Now, if they don't all go, they may give them away next week, but I think they'll all be gone by the end of this week. So to take advantage of it and to get the After Dark newsletter, call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast this hour. It's the Spin Doctor, Dr. John Curtis. And his website, of course, is always at your beck and call at onlinecolumnist.com. Do you think, John, this is going to calm down, or is it going to continue to fester?
No, I think it's going to blow over. I mean, it's, you know, it's a single incident like this. I think, you know, you have to look at the importance of the religion in the Islam, the world of Islam, in terms of the failure of many of these governments to provide for the people, and how the mosques and the religion really picks up and takes care of people. So there is a lot of sensitivity. It is being exploited right now by outside groups like Al Qaeda and by some of these institutionalized governments like Syria and Iran, and they have a good reason to. I mean, look at the pressure the U.S. is putting on Iran right now in the Security Council because of their uranium enrichment program. And just recently, we had the Palestinians vote in Hamas, which is a radical Islamic group, basically, partly because they're better at providing for the needs of the people than the Fatah faction of the Palestinian Authority. So in that context, I think people need to show a little bit more awareness of the possible repercussions to politically incorrect behavior. God knows we're, George, we're extremely tuned into being, being cautious about being politically incorrect here. I mean, people lose their careers over making a few off-color remarks in politics and in the celebrity world. So why should publications like major newspapers be any different?
Well, and what's important is everybody needs to understand that the inciting of all this is being done by people who have some special interest. Iran, Syria, other groups who want war. Iran, they want the heat off them, off their nuclear program. Syria, because they're under major UN investigation for the assassination of the Lebanese prime minister. They all have a reason why they want this to fester, John.
Oh, they do. And, you know, the primary reason is really to just use this as a propaganda tool. This is the greatest propaganda tool. You've got the U.S. being painted with this, even though the U.S. has nothing to do with these Danish cartoons. And President Bush was out there in front of the curve today, basically saying, look, we believe in free speech, but there are also limits to it. And he, you know, chastised publications and newspapers to be more cautious and consider the world in which we're living right now.
To the phones we go. First time caller line. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm Barbara from Brooklyn.
Hi, Barbara from Brooklyn. Go ahead, hon.
Well, I think people are ignoring the contents of these cartoons. They say they are blasphemous and insulting. Those poor cartoonists were really asking for mercy. those cartoons about the bombing in the Mohammed's turban and then the depletion of the virgins are really saying, please stop bombing us.
Well,
and they are appealing.
I think you're right. I mean,
they are appealing.
Well, hold on, though. When has there been a bombing in Denmark?
Well, yes, but they are not Denmark, but this is what
this was doing. Was it a Danish newspaper? And
even so,
and that's where
this
all this started.
Fear. This is what we fear. What the Western world fears.
Wait, of
they
course
are
it is. But you have to admit that it is the subject matter is offensive to these people.
It's of humor. Excuse me for speaking when you're speaking.
They don't take it as a sense of, you know, the one person's, you know, they take it as an insult, basically, and they're deeply offended by it. So we need to be more tuned into that. I think that's the message here.
And, John, here's the important thing. You know, I've got a fast blast from somebody who says, we don't give in to terrorists. This has nothing to do with that. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about dealing with terrorism and trying to annihilate these butchers and murderers out there who have chopped off heads of innocent people. And people need to understand, we're not talking about that. We're talking about inciting. We're talking about people being insensitive. Look, I won't say on the radio tonight, but I guarantee you I can paint pictures of several episodes of races and ethnicities, of pictures that could be put in newspapers that various groups would absolutely go ballistic about the next morning.
They'd be so outraged. In fact, you'd be booted off the radio you were to create those images, and you know that.
And it's not funny stuff at all.
No, it's not. I mean, look at it. It's happened to baseball executives. It's happened to U.S. senators. It wasn't that long ago. That happened to Trent Lott. We know the seismographic sensitivity that people have to politically incorrect speech. If we're that aware of it here in this country, why aren't we sensitive to it in others? In other countries, I think the rush to defend these images right now, I think, is a mistake, because it's not a free speech issue. It's a question of what's appropriate and what is offensive. And I think we're this country has been through it, and we know what politically correct speech is.
See, I think because of the real hatred toward terrorism, which we all feel, at least I hope we do, that is being mixed in with this. And there's really two different issues here. Now, I'm not talking about the people inciting these people out there, the people who have their own motives. That's a different story. And I think, and again, you know, sooner than later, we're going to see the major conflict because of this. I predicted 2 weeks ago that this Iranian situation will truly heat up by March. We're only a few weeks away. It's not going to keep going. Something's going to happen.
Well, the Iranian situation is the most dangerous situation that we face because, you know, I mean, they're feverishly trying to pursue a bomb.
Not only is it dangerous because of who they are and what they're doing, but it's dangerous because they're obviously publicly vocal about what they would do if they ever had the capability.
Well, I think they've basically said that they'd like to see Israel wiped off the map, and I think that has to send chills through, you know, Israel and in this country in terms of the possibility of this group of lunatics developing a nuclear bomb. And I think that they're pursuing it very aggressively right now.
You've got Iran talking about blowing Israel off the face of the map,
right,
working on nuclear possibilities. Then you've got the newly elected Hamas group of Palestinians who have said again today, we don't care what anybody says. We are not going to recognize Israel, and we are still going to continue with suicide bombs. I mean, if you are in Israel right now running that government, you would feel as if they were putting the great squeeze play on you. You're going to do something about it.
Well, look, I think the Israelis know how to manage the Palestinians, especially Hamas. They've been doing that for years. I don't think that's as much of a concern of theirs. Let's face it, they didn't really feel that Yasser Arafat was much of a peace partner for all those years, or the current Palestinian Authority, because they never thought that they had control of these radical Islamist groups like Hamas. So the thing that Israel's most concerned with, or the U.S. is most concerned with right now, is the cryptic, you know, the weapons-grade uranium enrichment program that is going on in Iran, and the referral to the U.N. If that doesn't produce some kind of a result to halt this uranium enrichment program, then I think that we're in for a potential unilateral action either by Israel or the United States to take out their nuclear facility.
And if people really understand the situation in the Middle East, specifically with Israel and the Palestinians, they will truly know and accept the fact that both sides have been equally responsible for some horrible, inhumane treatment of other people. The Israelis have done some horrible things to Palestinians. The Palestinians have done horrible things to innocent Israelis. And we have, as a planet, have got to stop this. We've got to sit back and we've got to say enough of this, it's going to pull us all.
Do you know, George, the point that you're making right now is exactly the message and the point of Munich, which was Spielberg's film that created so much criticism for him. That he's practically been shunned by the Oscars. He was basically bounced out of the Golden Globes because he gave two sides of the story. Exactly what you're saying is that there's suffering on both sides. And that doesn't mean that there's a moral equivalency to attacking a group of innocent athletes and Olympic Games. What it means is that there's two sides of the suffering that you're pointing out.
Absolutely. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, hello, this is Rafi. I'm calling from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hello, Rafi. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, the reason I'm calling is to make a point about this the situation in the Middle East. You know, I'm from Afghanistan, and I just think this is a very crazy, you know, thing going on over there. And one of the callers that called before mentioned something about it, and I just think those radicals that have started this thing, that are firing this thing, maybe they're the ones that have started it.
What would you do, Rafi, to kind of temper this, to kind of make things go away? How would you handle it?
I think the only way we can really stop this is for all the ones that think that this is wrong, is for them to get out there, you know, get their voices heard, and say that this is just wrong. I mean, that the cotton, you know, so what, you know? And, there's a peaceful way of dealing with this.
Oh, I would agree with that, and I would hope that people would take that advice.
Yeah.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies. You're on the air with Dr. John Curtis on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Mark Durant, Salt Lake.
Hi, Mark.
You?
Fine, thank you.
Hey, I just want to make one comment real quick about the Middle East. As soon as what's going on right now, Iran has threatened to hold oil back as a weapon in this.
Well, we know that. And if they have a nuke, if they have a bomb, then they can hold the entire Persian Gulf hostage. That's 50% of the oil that moves through the world.
Well,
that would be paralyzing the Western civilization.
What's really worrisome is they've threatened to cut off Europe if the governments don't apologize for what the newspapers are printing. But what's really worrisome about that, as soon as oil becomes cheaper for us to go in and just forcibly take, we will.
Well, I think you're right.
Right now, it's cheaper for us to buy it.
Yeah.
It'll be cheaper for us to buy it, even if the price doubles. But as soon as it quits being cheaper for us to buy, we'll take, and we won't worry about whatever civilization gets in our way.
Yeah. Well, you're right about that. But, you know, hopefully with President Bush's new proposal for utilizing switchgrass and to manufacture ethanol, maybe at some point we can get out from under this dependence on Middle Eastern oil. But in the time being, I think what you're pointing out is a very real risk to all of this, and that is there could be a massive disruption to the U.S. oil supply, which would mean that the country would lapse into we'd grind to a halt, we'd plunge into a recession immediately, not a depression if that happened.
Well, let me tell you, most Iranians would love our form of government, and they love our lifestyle, John, and they would think nothing better than to have these mullahs tossed out of Iran at any moment.
Well, it's not that the truth, because there's a youth movement there that are so highly repressed right now that they have to go into caves in the hills outside of Tehran to listen to Western music or even to put lipstick on. Otherwise, they're either beaten or they're put in jail for engaging any kind of what was regarded as Western behavior. I mean, since the Shah was booted out and Ayatollah Khomeini came in, I mean, this was the beginning of, Islamic radicalization. And I think, well, not the beginning of it, but it was certainly the institutionalization of it by having Iran taken over by this kind of brutal repression. And I think that there is a collision course right now that this country's on with Iran. And I think that my regret about Iraq is I think that Iran all along was the big threat, and I think that's really where we should be putting our energy.
I think so, too. Wildcard Line, welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, sir. Take it away.
Hey, George. This is the first time I've been on your show. I really like it.
Well, thank you.
I'm a little bit disturbed by, and it seems to be coming a little bit out of the left, the disproportionate response from a cartoon to what else is going on. I don't really think that it's reasonable to compare a cartoon with mass suicides and death and war. And I just wanted to point out that, you know, fundamental Islam attacked New York long before we were in Iraq or Afghanistan or this cartoon was public. I'd like to get your comment on that.
Well, I think you're right about that. And you're also right about the fact that all around this planet, nobody is really talking about the real issue here. And it's not the cartoon, which has incited, of course, all this, and again, makes a bad situation even worse. You know, it's what's behind it. It's the diversion tactics involved, because these people want to take this to the mat. And, you know, you've got the Iranian president who thinks he's in the middle of the end times. I mean, these people are absolutely convinced this is the time to do it.
But you've got an Iranian president, think about this, who's lecturing the world that the Holocaust never occurred, and you have a German chancellor, Angela Merkel, who's basically saying, you bet it occurred. It occurred in our country, and we're deeply regretful for it. And yet you've got this kind of psychopathic behavior going on in a major country that is seeking a nuclear bomb right now. And so this proliferation scenario that is going on in Iran is something that you cannot placate.
And what is this economic sanctions if the United Nations slaps them with economic sanctions? I mean, that's not going to stop them from doing what they're doing.
Well, they can, you know, the UN can basically create a sanction that just like they did in Iraq, which prevents them from really selling oil to member states of the UN.
But they'll still continue to build whatever they're building.
Well, they will. That's true, especially if they're getting as much help as they have been from Russia.
And then if they complete it, desperate people, John, do desperate things.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the reason why I think there's so much at stake right now. In terms of halting this proliferation, this uranium enrichment program over there. And if Iran gets a nuke, I think that all bets are off in the entire Persian Gulf and the Middle East. I think the U.S. loses complete control of that geographic region.
Don't they know that they aren't going to be able to make it so tactical that if they do something to Israel, the radiation fallout could wipe them out too?
Well, and also, even though Israel is a non-declared nuclear state, I think most people do know that they harbor nuclear weapons and that they surely would retaliate in a massive way against Iran. So, but I don't think it's really going to come down to that. I think what is going to happen with this is the Iranians are going to be forced to back off on this program, or I think that they will face some kind of a confrontation, either at the UN and possibly military options.
Well, look into your crystal ball, John Curtis. What will happen?
I think that we're right now. I think Iran is going to back down, and there's going to be some kind of a plan to offset this enrichment program. I think they're going to play games with Iran. They're going to continue to stonewall and to engage in kind of surreptitious behavior, but I do think that we are heading for a military confrontation with Iran. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
All right, John Curtis, next time, my friend, you take care.
All right.
Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. I go to it quite often just to get his views and perspective, another different view. In a moment, a very special guest, Charles Upton, with a couple different angles that we're going to talk about tonight, the UFO deception, and also something about end times. We'll be back.